ambassador who stressed that we still have to try and find a way forward with the United States. Online, Dr. Oscar van Heerden, scholar of international relations who focuses on international political economies with an emphasis on Africa and SADC in particular. Dr. Oscar van Heerden, welcome to Newsbeat.
Good and good day to your listeners.
Of course, it was interesting that Ibrahim Rasool received a warm welcome on his return from the United States. And it seems as if it was something of a suicide mission, and I put that in inverted commas, because to be honest with you, I don't think any ambassador could have succeeded in the climate which is existing right now.
No, exactly. I think you're right when you say it was a sort of a suicide mission of sorts, because the truth is the guns were out for him even before he landed in Washington, D.C. And we have an over-eager candidate to in the form of Joel Pollack, who wants to be the U.S. ambassador to South Africa. And so he's been watching and seeing how he can endure himself to the State Department and Marco Rubio. And as you know, he's the one who took the public lecture, highlighted or lifted some of the talk of Ambassador Rasool, and then proceeded to write a very scathing article and alert Secretary of State Marco Rubio to what Ambassador Rasool had said and inferred and analyzed. And that led to his expulsion. So, you know, the truth is that we have a group of Zionists around Trump, people who see no fault in what the state of Israel is doing to the Palestinians in the West Bank and in Gaza, the genocide that's happening there. And they are hell-bent on teaching South Africa a lesson, because how dare South Africa take Israel to the International Court of Justice and Netanyahu and Gallant to the International Criminal Court.
But of course, President Ramaphosa very cleverly has become part of, I think, what they call the Hague Group, where a number of countries have joined forces, as it were, in terms of the ICJ judgment, which now forces the United States to have to make a collective decision or take collective action, because it's not just South Africa. Other countries are now on board.
No, absolutely. But the truth is that, you know, what's happening here is they want to send a message and make an example of South Africa. And by doing so, they've cleverly worked out that besides the ICJ matter, which is, of course, top of the agenda for them, they can also kill two birds with one stone in a figure of speech, because by targeting South Africa, you are sending a message to those that are in the Hague Group. We can do this to you too, so watch it. But they are also wanting to target South Africa, because South Africa is part of the BRICS formation. It's the weakest link with the BRICS formation. And they are saying to the plus members of BRICS, not necessarily the permanent five, if you like, but the plus members, if we can do this to South Africa, we are coming for you too. We can do it to you too. And lastly, they are also targeting South Africa and expelling our ambassador from D.C., again, sending a very clear message to other embassies, particularly from the Global South. Toe the line, keep quiet, accept the decree ruling of King Trump. Otherwise, the same will happen to you that happened to Ambassador Rasool.
Of course, in the short term, it may have an effect, but when I look to the medium and long term, it starts to turn out to be a quick case of Trump aiming a shotgun at his one foot, because this is not going to benefit the U.S. going forward. We've even seen tensions in the Eurozone, where countries like Finland, United Kingdom and others have issued a travel advisory for the U.S. I mean, you couldn't be more surreal.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. This stick approach to international relations, to diplomacy, is simply not what is going to be acceptable to many. You've seen already that European countries and the EU Commission came out very forcefully supporting South Africa, supporting South Africa's candidacy as the chair of the G20 for this year, saying that they are unequivocally supporting South Africa, because they know having walked the walk with South Africa during apartheid and beyond in our democracy, that domestic laws such as the expropriation law and so on, Bella, NHI, these are all laws that not only went through the democratic process of a constitutional democracy in terms of parliament, its portfolio committees and so forth, but also it is about redressing the past imbalances and injustices. So for anyone like Trump or Elon Musk or Marco Rubio to want to infer that it is racist and targeted at specific groups and so forth, it is just the clearest sign of not understanding the history of South Africa.
Then, of course, do you think Trump is going to have to sail back on a number of things that he's trying to do in terms of flooding the zone with sewage, as it were? Because we're already seeing that Canada's preparing to fight back. Apparently, US envoys are going to Greenland and they're going to be told to go away and stop bothering Greenland, for example. Do you think that a lot of these things which Trump is suggesting are unrealistic and economic suicide for the US, that he's going to start having to go back on a lot of these imperial orders that he's been giving with that big fat cokey pen?
Look, I mean, the truth of the matter is that there is a huge pushback, both legally and, of course, socially. There's pushback in the courts in the United States, and already we've seen certain rulings by the judiciary going contrary to what Trump wants, and now he's targeting judges and he's targeting the judiciary, which is not going to augur well for democracy. He's targeting various groups in the country, academia, and so forth. And he's doing all of these things. And of course, as you've indicated, there's also the stick approach to diplomacy. He's weaponized diplomacy now. He's weaponized trade by talking and threatening tariffs and so on. He's weaponized the US dollar. He's weaponized the international payment system. These are all things that the US is doing because it is beginning to lose its grip as the unipolar hegemon of the world. The empire is crumbling. The signs are there for all to see. And so in a way, you can't blame Trump to desperately wanting to claw back that hegemonic status. They don't want a multilateral multipolar world. They want to remain the dominant, and the only way they can do it is through force, through violence, through threats, and through bullying. And unfortunately, that is precisely the strategy that is not going to work globally, and hence we see a number of countries pushing back. You institute tariffs on China, China can do the same to the US. We've seen, for example, it's not just about blanket tariffs. The Chinese have been very clever. They targeted one industry within the agriculture, which was soybeans, and already billions of dollars are hanging in the balance, just to send a shock to Trump to say, you are no longer the hegemon that can just dictate that we all must follow your lead. We also have some armory and some ammunition in our armory. And we've seen it with Mexico, we've seen it with Canada, and unfortunately, we are going to continue seeing pushback to the hegemony of the United States.
Most certainly. And talking about economic things, one of the most encouraging things I heard the other day was of a Western Cape apple farmer who used to supply the US. He is now sending all his crop to Mexico, and Mexico, by the way, was a very willing buyer. Do you think this is a direction we need to go as fast as we can? Because it does seem as if there are other willing trade partners for our goods.
Absolutely. I want to emphasize this. This is not an intransigent South African government. This is not a South African government who just woke up one morning and decided they want to be enemies with the largest economy in the world. The United States is forcing us and others to look at alternatives. If you are going to threaten us, then we have to look at alternative markets. If you are going to stop funding, then we have to become self-reliant and or look at other potential donors that can fill those gaps. If you are going to weaponize the dollar, then automatically, logically, We have to look at alternative international currencies and how we pay for trade and service, goods and services. Not because we wanted to, but because the U.S. has decided to weaponize the U.S. dollar as the international reserve currency. And so the U.S. needs to do some serious introspection. They need to ask themselves, what is it that they want to do going forward over the next 2 to 3 decades? Because at the moment, the crumbling of that empire is so severe that targeting other countries and enforcing and using violence is not going to be helpful.
And of course, talking about the dollar for the past 2 weeks has been extremely weak against the rand. So there are more signs of decay faltering through. At one stage, the rand was 18.01 to the US dollar last week, and that was compared to 18.54 the week before.
Absolutely, and it's going to continue on that trend. You know, the truth of the matter is that no one has a problem with a campaign of making America great again. You want to bring manufacturing back into the United States? Absolutely fine. You want, but the way to do it is not through coercion and threats and violence. The way to do it is to say, let us all partner together. Let us all benefit together in order to make the American economy what it used to be many, many moons ago. And unfortunately, you know, it's not that people are siding with China, people are siding with India and Brazil because they want to be anti-American. No, those are credible alternatives. Those are people that have a different approach to international relations, to international trade and diplomacy. And that's why Africa, Latin America, and the Global South is beginning to say we are not going to be battered and bruised and bullied. Those days are over because we have alternatives.
Yeah, my final sort of question stroke comment in my mind's eye, I've got this picture of the United States like in the 1930s just becoming a dust bowl of despair in the next 30 years if the current trajectory continues.
No, absolutely. And that's why I'm saying, you know, the Trump administration is a 4-year administration. We don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We need to weather the storm. Hopefully the electorate is going to realize that they've made a mistake by electing Donald Trump. But also the Democrats and the liberals need to ask very tough questions. Has there been an end to capitalism as we know it, given the 2008-2009 international financial crisis? Is liberal democracy as we know it today the answer to actually enforcing capitalism and global trade and global relations? Or is there other models that we need to begin to investigate and look at? Because at the moment, the scenario suggests that those are things that needs to be reviewed, that needs to be looked at, and different models needs to be adopted.
100%. Dr. Oscar van Heerden, scholar of international relations, thank you for joining us on Newsbeat.
Always a pleasure.